Hey everybody, I got Rhonda and Cassandra here with me, so we'll be sharing this screen here in a minute. Go ahead and unmute here and just make sure we can hear everybody. Does you guys hear us?
And John, would you mind going ahead and claim host, and then you can start, we can start the recording.
Here I did.
Here, oh, he already did. Okay.
Yeah. John, I'm gonna make you host here. Because I had already claimed host, I think, when I came in.
I'm gonna assume, going on the assumption that's the other John.
Yeah, John, yeah.
Yeah, I have no interest in being host at my first meeting.
Oh, you didn't sign up for that? What?
I mean, I'll do it, but I'd rather let a more qualified John take care of things.
Okay, I am the host now. And we are recording.
Great, thank you so much, John.
It's right here.
Gotcha. I was wondering why nothing was coming up. And I think we're just about ready. As soon as we get to 10 o'clock, we can go ahead and get started.
Well, my clock just flashed over to 10, so I guess I'll call the meeting to order.
Okay. All right. Thank you so much, Betsy.
Yeah.
All right. Then we'll go ahead and do a roll call. Betsy Mahoney.
Here.
Esther Curry. Amanda Doherty.
Here.
John Howard.
Here.
Bill Pfeiffer. Miranda Shake.
Here.
And Diane Yeoman.
Here.
Okay. Did everybody have a chance to review the minutes from our last meeting?
Yes. I'll make a motion that we approve the minutes.
Okay.
I'll second.
Okay, and was that Amanda?
Yeah.
Okay, thank you. All right, Betsy Mahoney?
Yes.
Amanda Doherty?
Yes.
John Howard?
Yes.
Miranda Shake?
Yes.
And Diane Yeoman?
Yes.
Okay, and Jill, welcome. Thank you so much. We were just voting on the minutes from the previous meeting. Okay, so we'll go ahead and get started with the share update. I have just a little bit of information regarding the connectivity issues with the some of our third-party vendors. We did find that there had been some issues both on the Polaris side and on the Aspen side, and so we're still trying to track down exactly what There are some still some things going on, but there was a an indexing problem that was causing some deletions of our records. And so Aspen is continually re-indexing our catalog to try to bring those records back in. And so they've turned off some of the scripting that would have them deleting records if there were errors with the Polaris side for that connection. And so on their end, that has been fixed. And like I said, they're continually doing a re-index, but it's because our catalog is so large, it's just taking a long time. On the Polaris side, they found that there were two planned updates daily, and that's my non-technical understanding. Troy might be able to tell you exactly what it was doing. But what was happening is when they were trying to go through an index on daily, and so bumping up against that planned maintenance was causing the problems in those blips. And so that was just a cumulative effect. So we have disabled those, and we're trying to get it resolved. There are still some other issues going on with both ePay and with NCR that specifically, as well as some issues with Solus. So we've been getting a lot of reports of holds not going through. So those tickets are still outstanding. It's still not working at the level we expect it to. And so that's why we haven't had an update quite yet. But we are still working on it. And so that's something just to give you all a little bit of information. It should be looking better, but it's not back to where we expect it to be. So we're still trying to track down some of those issues. The other information is something that we'll be talking about a little bit today. We're still seeing issues with Verizon. We have also been notified that if you're sending out notifications like receipts, sometimes those are not going through as well through Verizon customers. And so we did, based on some suggestions from the circulation committee, we did put up some communications on both the old catalog as well as the Aspen catalog. So those were very visible, but we'll be talking about some solutions today during the meeting. I also wanted to just
really quickly the Verizon problem, in, or if Troy's in the room, like Verizon also, like something like Mint Mobile uses the Verizon network. I think we figured out there's some other company that people use a lot. I can't remember now what it is.
Sprint PCS.
Okay. Is it also affecting all of those?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. Because sometimes I think just people aren't making that connection because it needs to be spelled out. Like they're just thinking only Verizon. You know, and so it might be helpful to maybe send out a communication to the membership so that they can forward it to their circulation staff to say, like, this isn't, or reword what's on the catalog, Verizon and any subsidiary adjacent, you know, Verizon customers. Or, you know what I mean? It's like, just because you say Verizon, I can tell you none of my staff here understand that it's affecting all of these other cell services as well. So when their patrons come in with Mint Mobile, they don't know. They don't get that connection because that hasn't been spelled out for them.
Yeah, companies like, it's tough because like US Cellular or and Consumer Cellular, those kind of companies, they buy time from Verizon and AT&T. So just because you have Consumer Cellular doesn't necessarily mean you're affected. It could go either way. So it's hard to articulate that in a way that isn't going to raise more eyebrows than necessary. So, but maybe there's some wording we can use.
Maybe instead of even identifying Verizon specifically, maybe we could say due to problems with cell phone provider and just leave it vague. Mm-hmm. that you might experience, and rather than calling out Verizon specifically, because there are so many other subsidiaries, I think that we had updated it for Spectrum and Xfinity, mm-hmm. but so many of the paper, like the prepaid mobile providers are on that network as well. We could just broaden it and just, because even if you're like with AT&T, you know, we've had issues with that network before too. And so we can, you know, make it a little bit more so people are aware.
Yeah.
And then that way they can report if they're having issues. Okay. All right, thank you, Jill. So the next thing that I had is I actually just wanted to give the committee an update. We do have a new face that you might see with us today. John Kirchner is our new share member engagement specialist. And so we've also got Jacob, who is also going to be doing the minutes for the committee. And so what I'd like to do is now go ahead and turn it over to John as the new share member engagement specialist to give the remainder of the share update.
Yeah. So hello, it's nice to meet all of you. So the first thing we're going to be talking about is the Aspen update. So we have been getting people trained for cohort 4A, and it's gone live. And we have scheduled we have scheduled training for libraries new to Aspen and the 4A cohort. In fact, the first customization setting is customization training is tomorrow. And then cohort 4B will be starting to go through that process next month. We are still working on getting MARC records sideloaded for a lot of e-resources that were not originally working with the Aspen API. And so that is an ongoing project that we are still working on. And Aspen, we have been learning a little bit about the Aspen Web Builder, which comes free with Aspen for building websites. We haven't quite looked at it yet. We are, once we get everyone live with Aspen, we are going to start looking at the web builder and seeing how we can help our member libraries use that once we get everyone going live with Aspen. Let me see. So, that's all there is with Aspen.
Hey, John, really quickly, one thing you might want to check into with the Aspen Web Builder is realize you're not there yet. We're not there yet, but making sure it's compliant with the accessibility standards that a lot of libraries will be bumping up to in 2025 and 2026. I would imagine more of those libraries will be 2026 because they're probably smaller libraries. But that's just something to, like, if it's something you're going to make available and libraries are going to use, we want to make sure that we're not giving them something that then doesn't meet the new standards that they have to.
So Jill, that's something that I've already talked to Aspen about, and they do have their accessibility standards available online. What's difficult about a website, especially one that is fairly self-managed, it's not something like a company coming in and doing the work. So if you've got a library that's interested in using that product, it's really going to be the library's responsibility to make sure that it is accessible. And so with that, you know, there are some embedded tools to make sure for the accessibility, but if you're adding content in that, so like you're adding a flyer, you need to make sure that the PDF is machine readable, and so there's ways of doing that so the data isn't, you know, being compressed and taken out. There's also, you know, if you're adding like flyers, making sure that the colors are readable. And so there is going to be some responsibility for the library of understanding what those accessibility needs are for an online audience. And so the site itself does meet some of those requirements, but as you add content, that libraries are going to have to be also aware to make sure that they're meeting those standards also, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay.
And then another important thing is that, so starting July, the updated pricing for the cataloging fees is effective. So the express cataloging is now $4 an item. And then the cataloging staff are billed at $12 per item now instead of the original rate of 10. And those increases were effective starting July 1st. And then also starting July 1st, all share member libraries are now get the use of Cloud Library starting this fiscal year, which we're very happy to be able to provide that to our members. And we have some training opportunities for our catalogers in July, which is we sent out a memo about that, but any catalogers needing to get their continuing education, they can check that out. And that's all I have.
Great. Thank you so much, John. I'd also like to turn it over to either Dina or Jennifer.
Thanks, Cassie. Just an addition to what John was saying about cataloging prices changing, if we've received any of your items July 1st or before, June 30th or before, they will be charged the old price. If we received it July 1st and after, that's when we get the new price. There was a glitch with our $3 bib / express cataloging. We received duplicate help desk tickets. They came through after July 1st, and we don't have a way of identifying if they came in before July 1st or on July 1st. So any that we received with the date July 1st are going to be charged the old $3 price. July 2nd and after will be the new price. And if you have any questions about those, if you're like, I'm not sure which one I had, feel free to send me an email and I can dig into it and find out for sure. Thank you.
Hey, Jennifer. Sorry, I hate to be the question queen today. But since we made a lot of changes and we knew it was going to affect various different libraries when we stopped offering different services, and, you know, have we gotten any pushback on that? Has there been any negative vibes about it? Does nobody really care? Are they fine with it all?
I've seen a slight uptick in $3 bib requests, or sorry, that will take a long time to get used to. Express cataloging requests, which is good. Summers are typically slow for items to come into us, so I'll have a better idea if there's any changes in that regard, probably mid-August when schools are back in session. That seems to be when we pick up with our regular cataloging. But other than that, I have not really received any negative feedback. I had one library slightly confused about some pricing, and I explained it to him and all was good. So yeah, thankfully nothing like I was expecting.
Yeah. That's what I was wondering. Thanks.
No problem.
Good morning. I just wanted to mention really quickly that as of yesterday, if you're at a public library, which I think everybody is, I have changed everyone's permissions. So as of right now, if you're at a public library and you type in a patron's name, let's say John Smith, you are only going to see John Smiths who are registered at public libraries. You no longer have access to those whose library cards were issued from grade school, elementary school, intermediate school, junior high, so on and so on. We did this to protect the patrons' privacy, especially with those young kids, because half of share libraries are schools. We made the change. Oh my goodness, I don't even remember now. Kind of in reverse. So if you're at a school, I did it, oh God, maybe a year ago. If you're at a school, you only see those students at your school or your district. You don't see anyone from the public libraries. So for the public libraries, we just kind of reverse that. But so like Betsy at 6 Mile, you see all of your patrons, and you're still seeing all public library patrons system-wide. That's not an issue, but I did that. I finalized everything yesterday, but I'm not in a frontline staff situation anymore. So please don't hesitate to reach out if you find that there's something that's a little quirky about it. It's not like it's supposed to be. Permissions are quite the beast. You have to do a lot of testing with it. So if you find something that's not quite right, please let me know. And I think that's all I've been working on. Oh, and I'm only about halfway through the alphabet. I think I got through letter O. I'm sending libraries their list of long overdue items. We're trying to get that cleaned up. We're having printer issues here at the Carpentale Hub, so I'm waiting for us to get a real printer back again before I pick up where I left off. So if your library is in that latter part of the alphabet, you will be getting a little a letter from me and with some instructions, and then the list of your library's items that are considered long overdue.
All right, thank you so much, Dina. Okay, so I think that's all we have for the share update. Does anybody have any additional questions?
I have one for Dina. I just want to be clear. So, and I thought I read it correctly in your letter. If someone has one of our books long overdue that is in another building, we can go into their patron records just to mark it lost, correct?
Yeah, it's your book.
Okay. I know, but you're not supposed to touch other patrons' records. So I just wanted to be clear.
The reason things go into long overdue, and there's always those things that kind of slip through the cracks. It happens. Modern technology. The reason things go into long overdue 99% of the time is because libraries aren't running their overdue notices on a consistent basis. We've had the long overdue list will tell you the last time a notice was generated for it. We had one library that hadn't ran their overdue notices in about 10 years. so you can imagine that that's generally what it is. Is the library's not running them consistently. Running the overdue is what prompts the system to trigger things for it to go into that lost status. So if you're never printing your overdue notices and posting them to the database for those patrons who don't get electronic notices, it will never go into lost unless you manually do it. Keep in mind, if you decide to bill another library for one of your items, you only have up to 18 months to do that. So be sure and look at the date on there. And I don't have a long overdue report in front of me, but I believe it has the date due on there. So it has to be within that 18-month time frame of the date due. Otherwise, you're unable to bill the library, unfortunately. Most libraries, especially some of the bigger libraries, their reports was none of their patrons had their own items long overdue. It was all patrons from other libraries. I think part of the factor is during COVID, a lot of libraries just kind of held off printing their overdues for many reasons, and they just haven't got back into the swing of things and doing it again. I had so many calls that were like, oh my gosh, we stopped during COVID and we completely forgot about it. So it happened. So hopefully this will get cleaned up. I had one library, they've been working on it, and they, I don't even know how many pages of report. And she called me yesterday with some questions. I pulled it up. It's totally cleared off now. So
I just wanted to be sure, because we were always told in the very beginning, you never touch another patron's record. So,
and you don't even have to declare it lost. You can still bill the library for the item without declaring it lost.
But we can declare it lost.
Yeah, to me, I it's your book. Cassandra may disagree with me. I don't know.
Yeah, absolutely. And if it, because of the known issue of the problems with the notices having to trigger that, yes, absolutely. Yeah. Or the other option is it doesn't necessarily even need to be marked. If you've got a book that is just lost in limbo, you wouldn't even necessarily need to mark it as lost. You can go ahead and just send a bill, because that usually addresses whatever issue the hangup is.
Yeah.
And it's always a good thing.
A lot of libraries went fine free also during COVID, and they just, since they went fine free, they didn't think about their overdue notices. And I know postage has gotten insanely expensive. So even if your library had to mail out 10 overdues a day over a year's time, that's gonna add up very quickly to a lot of money. So I've told libraries, I personally don't care if you mail them out. If you wanna then print them out and then make a phone call to the patron, or you know, shoot them an email or something, if they aren't getting the electronic notices, but at least go in there and post them to the database. If your patrons, if they get electronic notices, so if they if their patron registration shows, text message, email for the notification option, your library doesn't have to do anything. They're going out, hopefully, fingers crossed, with all the issues we're having. You don't have to do anything, but those patrons who aren't getting electronic notices, they're not getting anything unless your library does them. So at least go in there and post them to the database. So it'll trigger things to go to the next step and then to the next step and then finally into that billing status if the patron chooses not to return it.
Okay. Thank you, Dina. Did anybody else have any questions on the updates? Okay, then I will go ahead and turn it over to Rhonda for the share financial review.
Okay, good morning, everyone. So the share reports that we shared with you are marked with a watermark draft because they are drafts until we have our audit completed in September, and then our board will vote on the final audited financial statements. So there could be some changes to these numbers up until the audit completion. So I'll go ahead and just share right now what we have for 6/30 booked for the end of this fiscal year and some highlights on that. So as I highlighted on the statement of revenue and expenditures, the fees for services and materials, they were billed out as a total of $1,570,872.57. And that was 101.1% of the projection. So we were just a little bit over the projected amount for the FY 2024 budget. And so as of 6/30, we have collected 98.8% of that, which a lot of that was billed right at the end of the year because of fourth quarter completions, such as cataloging and barcoding that billing. So the year-to-date actuals of expenses are below year-to-date budget by 9.3%. So we did really well there as far as overall expenditures. And some things back up in the revenue. I know, you know, we've talked about the investment income, and we did not ever move the money or have to move the money from Illinois funds, the 1 million that we put in there of operating cash, over to the checking account to use. We were able to keep that in there this year by that last IHLS transfer in May over for their contribution, help sustain those expenditures for the rest of the year. So now we're working on the billing to try to get some more cash flow in to also keep that money in there, because right now, as of, I think it was Sunday, the Illinois funds rate was at 5.37%. So really great. We want to keep as much money in there as possible and earn it while it's still high. So you can see that the total year of investment income was $113,702.10. So that is both Illinois funds in your reserve account and where we keep the money in your checking account. So the checking account total was actually the $595.26, but the Illinois funds added to your reserve for the year of $113,106.84. So really great there. We're really happy about that. We had projected low as we normally do, but we projected at $36,789 just in case we had to move some of that money out. So that gave an extra revenue to share for the year of $76,913.10. So you can see the comparison on the column that says year-to-date actuals and the column that says IHLS approved FY 2024 budget. And then that next column that says total budget variance are the difference. And that's just an area that you'd want to really look at. The overall variance for expenditures was $279,027.76. Those are expenditures that are a mix on that call or that row there from some things that we had because of this statement combined your reserve activity and your operating activity. Some of those things, like I think Solus we had for the last year and different things that are included in that number. So there's a mix of operating and reserve activity in that number. But overall, we were really happy with that ending number. And we'll have some, like I said, final numbers whenever it comes down to the audit report. And after that, I can break it out a little bit more for you between operating, where we ended with operating activity and where we ended with reserve activity. So on that, you could see there was just one item that was under our target benchmark, which should be 0% in that column for IHLS approved FY 2024 total budget remaining percentage for an expense, and that was for ebook purchases. So we do collect the money on that, so that really isn't concerning. So on the balance sheet, we can look at that next, and that is, let me pull that up real quick, showing the cash balance for 6/30 as a total of $2,197,167.88. So you have your unrestricted cash of $1,082,214.50, which if you notice at the bottom, that's highlighting that that operating amount will fund share for 6.0 months. So just right at the top of that 3 to 6 month benchmark that we want to keep that money at is where it ended for FY24. And so then your reserve cash balance is $1,077,230.72. So I think that's, correct me, do you want 1.2? What was our benchmark for that? I think we were just not at it quite yet, but maybe next year, because we won't have as many large expenditures, such as we had the big server, you know, project this past year that dipped into those funds. But the committed funds for ebooks is at $37,722.66. So overall, your cash balances look really good. I think we're just really a little bit under on that benchmark that we want for the reserve funds. And like I said, that mainly had to do with our large server project that we had to do this year, which is what the money is intended for. Anyway, so.
And so for the benchmark for the reserve fund is 1.2 million for the ILS potential future replacement, and then 400,000 on addition to that, excuse me, for continued infrastructure. So we're just under that, and I'm just going to continue working towards that eventual goal.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So that's really all I wanted to highlight on these. Like I said, they are drafts. We will have finals after the audit is completed in September. So that following meeting, I can go over more details of how FY 2024 really ended for share. So does anybody have any questions for me?
Yeah, so I'm new, so I'm sure these have probably been discussed in the past, but how much of the unrestricted cash are we able to keep in accounts that are pretty good interest rate? I mean, was the million you were talking about of unrestricted, or is that the reserve funds?
No, that's, well, it's a little bit of both. And we don't, we moved over $1 million. When was that? The year before last? I can't, it seems like
about
it's
a year ago.
Yeah. So we've just been trying to work our way through cash flow coming in to keep that money earning. So whenever we need it, we will have to eventually move it out of that account and back into the checking account to use. But right now we're just kind of, it's kind of a wait and see process. In July, when we do our annual billing, we get for share, we get revenue coming in right away. So even in the last couple of weeks that after these bills go out this week, we're going to have quite a bit of revenue coming in, and then we'll have it almost, you know, a large majority of it is collected by September, the end of September. So we try to utilize that money as the year goes on with what it has to use each month for FY25 expenditures, which we'll reevaluate on the next July statements.
So just on an average, how much do we keep in the, I assume you said we had a little bit of interest from the checking, but I assume it's a pretty minimal rate on a checking account. But what would be kind of our average daily balance that we hold there?
For share, it just, like I said, it really just depends on the time of the year. It's heavy whenever it comes, like I said, in July, August, September, but as we use that balance down, we usually are collecting, you know, $1 million, and then we're using that throughout the year in that checking account. But we do try to, I don't have a daily balance on that checking account. It's very low, you know, to be quite honest. That's why we try not to keep as much money in that. We also try not to move a lot of money back and forth because it's just, it's just a lot of transactions that way too. So I don't really have a daily balance, but I would say, you know, we're hitting, you know, close to $1 million, and then it's dwindling down as the year goes on.
Well, yeah, it's there. As you know, at my library, because we hold some pretty significant amounts sometimes, we found that in the last, as the interest rates got so much better, we are moving money more regularly between savings, or we have a money market account with our investment advisors that we can take the money, get the money back in 24 hours. Mm-hmm. We're getting 4.8 or 4.9% on that. So we're keeping, you know, 2 weeks, 2 weeks or 3 weeks of bills in checking and everything else. We find that by moving the money back and forth, we're getting thousands of dollars more in interest income every year. So I think, you know, as long as you're keeping good financial controls and keeping good paperwork, you know, if you got $100,000 and you can get 5% instead of 1% on it, even in a month, that's $300, $400 difference. You know, so that adds up pretty quickly with the rate, you know, with interest rates being the way they are now. So I guess I'd like to make sure that we're not making a donation to the bank of letting them have $1 million sitting at 0.5% interest. You can move it to a savings account within that bank or a money market account within the same bank that would get us an average daily, you know, would get us a little bit better turn. It, with the money we're talking about, it's significant. And it's free money, basically. You know, it's not billing a library for anything. If we can increase, you know, really find a way to supercharge what we're getting from their interest, it's free money.
And we can look at changing that too, of how we hold that money. I mean, that's up to this committee, I think, too, to kind of vote on. Did we vote on that 1 million transfer? No, I don't recall. You know, we could move it all over into that more of a, that account, and then move it back as needed. It's, like I said, just, it takes a little bit longer. What we do is our general fund for IHLS, it pays all the funds bills each month. And then at the end of the month, we transfer what was used for each fund over to general, because it's one checking account. Our policy, just so you know, just opening any account, our IHLS board has to have approval, and it is a, it's an, you know, process, and in the, we're limited on our I guess capacity in the finance department of how much that we can, you know, take more on. So as far as, which we've been trying to minimize accounts as much as possible over the years, because it is, it takes a lot of our staff time to manage. We don't all, you know, it's just not share, it's IHLS. We have three special revenue accounts. We have our capital, and then we also do the OCLC billing for the Illinois State Library, that we have accounts to manage for them too. So we're just very, yeah, we try to streamline our account management, just so it minimizes the work we have. So, but we can utilize
I'd really encourage you to really look into that. Where we've seen, like, really, it's been really worth the time spent and money back and forth to make sure that we're in an account that's closer to 5 and less, and, you know, less close to 1% with the amount of monies that we're talking about. And if you're dealing with 2 million in money for Heartland, plus whatever you get in the next month, or for share, I mean, I know Heartland probably has money beyond that. So, I would be sure, dismiss the idea that moving your money a little bit more actively back and forth might actually bring in, you know, if we could bring in $10,000 or $20,000 or $30,000 in interest, that's significant in what in terms of what Heartland and Shared does with that money. So.
Oh yeah, we as far as like Heartland too, we keep most of that in a account that earns interest until we need it, as we need it. But that is a lot of transfers, as in.
I'm aware of that because I'm involved with all the transfers here, but it's also been worth it.
Yeah. So I think now is a really good time to discuss that, because we will be doing our July invoicing and getting a lot of money in the next probably 2 to 3 months. So what we could do is maybe work on a benchmark of what would trigger a transfer like that. Because obviously, if we need money in our checking account, that's not up for discussion. We're going to move the money. But for what would trigger a transfer into the reserve, or not the reserve fund, excuse me, but the Illinois fund.
Yes.
So we've already got the benchmark of having a threshold of 3 to 6 months revenue available that would trigger a review. So John, you may not have known that, but that's how we determine if we need to discuss raising fees, is if we dip either above or below 3 to 6 months of operating expenses at any given time. So we could look at that as maybe a time frame of, like, you know, that we need to have, because Rhonda does average it out through the year of like 3 months or 6 months, that we would transfer anything above that, because we would probably only have to do it transfer it in the one time per year, because that's, we do the majority of our billing in July. But then also we would probably want to look at the interest rate too, because if it's only a 1% interest rate, we shouldn't be moving money around if we're not getting the return. So.
And yeah, Illinois funds could dip at any time too. You know, it just depends on the market, you know, and, you know, the whole Federal Reserve determining rates, you know, of course things too. We've seen that go up and down. Right now it's high and it's been sustaining high. So we'll see what happens, but we can definitely look at that more.
Okay. Would you all like me to bring a proposal to the next meeting for a benchmark of when we would transfer into the Illinois fund for a higher interest rate?
Yeah, if you want to talk about, we can talk about that more and then get a.
But is there something, I mean, it's not checking account or Illinois funds. There's other options out there. You know, with the bank that I assume we have our checking account at a bank, that bank might have a money market account that we can be having the money transferred back and forth within the bank within an hour if we need to.
Well, we actually did that, and it was IHLS, not necessarily Share, but we actually found that the money market, because sometimes there's really great money market rates, but as a commercial entity, you're not always entitled to those.
Or government.
Yeah, government entity. Because we actually found that out the hard way. So, because when we had tried to do it, that that was probably again this time last year, they said that it would just be they wouldn't offer that same rate to a government entity.
And we've had money markets at our current bank, but it wasn't really much more interest than their checking account was earning, but. You know, not that there isn't options again, but again, since Share is under the IHLS umbrella, there's processes that we have to go through to opening account and approvals on that end too. Every time we do that, and then setting up signers and so forth. So, but we, like I said, we're just trying to streamline, because Share's not only we have a small accounting department. It's not really our only fund, but you know, we have so much capacity there. So
I think it'd be really helpful for the committee to review exactly what would trigger a transfer like that, and just have it essentially written down as a procedure, so that that Rhonda knows that this is when it's time to do it and when that would happen. So
are we able to see where our money is sitting and what we're getting on it, right, you know, at any given time? Is that, you know, is that a report we could see?
We don't necessarily produce a report. You know, I don't really want that on a, I don't know how you do it at your library, but I have seen things where it gives a lot of information out there in the public for
details. Not looking at that. We're the finance committee. I'm not asking for a report.
The document.
I'm asking a report for the finance committee. It's our job to worry about stuff like this.
But we do have it for, as far as share, we have it sitting in the reserve, Illinois funds, and we have it sitting in a U.S. bank checking account too. Those are the only two accounts that we have for share.
Okay, well, I would like you to strongly consider looking at other options, because I think if we have hundreds of thousands of dollars sitting in a checking account, that's a missed opportunity. And it's
right now, it's probably less than, it's probably a little over 100,000. But like I said, it just depends at any time of the year where it is. So
yeah, and John, you have to remember, I know that you said hundreds of thousands, but Rhonda, what is our average expenditure per month?
It ranges. Let me tell you, maybe I could tell you exactly what FY24 was really quick.
I mean, the other thing would be to even look at whether, if you're sitting with large account balances and checking, whether there's a checking account that pays better interest.
And this, you know, for FY24, our expenditures for 1 month was averaged at 181,000 approximately. So, you know, Sharon puts out a lot of money each month. Right.
Okay, well, I will work on that with, in conjunction with Rhonda. We'll put together a proposal for our next meeting. Like I said, this is the perfect time to talk about it and really implement, because we will have, like Rhonda said, you know, we do the billing at the beginning of the year and then it just dwindles through the year. So now is really the right time to make that transfer. Okay. Any other questions about the financial statement or the information that Rhonda has provided for today? Okay, then we'll move on. We also, I had alluded to this, that we'd be talking about texting services. So I'd like to turn it over to Troy to maybe explain more in depth the issues with Verizon and how our servers are sending out those notifications, and the issue with the texting service generally is the throttling due to you know, trying to minimize spam from the cell phone providers. I'm sure, I know as elections are getting closer, I'm getting tons of like unsolicited, like, are you going to vote for Joe Schmo and all this. So they're trying to prevent that. So it's a good goal, but it's causing us some problems. So I'd like to have Troy just discuss it a little bit, and we'll talk about some proposed solutions.
Yeah, so a little bit of background, how it's always been done. The Polaris system doesn't really send out text messages. It sends out small emails that get converted to text messages to your patrons. And that technical process is called a SMS gateway. Every cell phone provider out there, every company has its own SMS gateway. That's why you have to put in the patron's phone number and pick their carrier. Because the carrier that you select is actually determining which of those gateway SMS gateways it sends that email to. That has worked great. It's always been best effort. It's always been free, but it was never a guarantee. So what has happened, and in the past we've had problems with AT&T a lot. It goes on and off, and we've had issues, but this is the first time it's been Verizon. And even though we have pockets of population in Heartland that are heavily AT&T, the vast majority of our patrons use Verizon as their provider, or one of the companies that uses Verizon's network. So this one has affected more patrons widespread than any of the other outages we've had. Verizon implemented a company called Cloudflare to basically rate limit how many of these email to SMS conversions happen from a single server at a time. So unfortunately, every single email from Polaris comes from one server. For every single one of our libraries, all the different notices that get sent, all the different receipts that get sent, all the holds, everything comes from one server. And so it's not a surprise that we hit their rate limit and they're throttling us basically. Some of them are getting through, but a very, very small percentage at this point. I don't think, so everything's working as designed, as Verizon wants it to be working and everything. So this isn't something that's just going to fix itself. It is, there are no technical problems. It's just a new policy that Verizon has implemented. So that kind of brings us to today on how do we move forward with this, knowing that this is the new reality. So we've looked at this in the past. There is a company called Twilio that is not a library company. It's just a company that you buy credits from and you can send SMS messages to anybody in the world. We've looked at that. It would have created a lot of in-house programming and API calls. You know, it was a multi-thousand dollar project, like 40 to 50,000 by the time you pay for credits and in-house work and everything. And at the time, everything was working, so it was not a big deal. But we Verizon made that change without obviously notifying us. Why would they? So there's another solution out there now that we've really kind of found out about at the last couple of conferences called MessageBee. And it's one of the products that Unique Management, mm-hmm. Unique Systems has in their portfolio of programs. And we use Unique already with collection agencies. We have a good relationship with them, good company. But what's great about their solution is it is library specific. So we don't have to do anything in-house besides make the changes inside Polaris that they request us to make. And it sends true SMS messages. So from what I understand, it doesn't matter what cell phone provider you select from that list. It will just use the telephone number only to send a direct SMS message. So it is much more reliable. And we can actually tell based on the report whether or not the SMS message got to the patron. Just like on your iPhone, it says delivered or read or whatever. We will be able to see that delivered status to where at this point, all we ever knew was we got it to Verizon. Or we got it to AT&T, and what happened after that, we have no clue. So there's a lot of advantages to doing it this way, but of course it's not free. So MessageBee has submitted a quote. We were hoping to get a quote from Innovative as well on their in-house solution, but it hasn't come. They say it's complete, but my gut feeling is Polaris's solution, Innovative solution, is going to be substantially higher than MessageBee. That's just our experience with their pricing. So anybody have any questions on that before I get into the actual proposal from MessageBee?
So as a customer, are we just complaining to Polaris that this is they you know that what they're doing is old technology and it doesn't work very well?
So yeah, in a lot of ways, and we're not the only ones complaining because a lot of libraries were affected by Verizon's change. Obviously, a lot of libraries use this. So they have implemented already the change in their software that supports basically this direct communication with companies like MessageBee that are doing true SMS sending. So there's really no way to for Polaris's software to send true SMSs directly. You have to go through another company. But they have changed their software to make it possible to do that.
a lot easier anyway. It's always been possible, but lots of scripts involved and lots of making it work. So it's much better now. Yeah.
Well, first off, I'm going to thank you very much for this explanation that you just gave me, because I haven't, because I don't work at the desk, but my staff have been really struggling with this with patrons who, this feels like it's been going on for weeks and I don't have an update to give them. And it's been making them just kind of feel like, these patrons feel like we're not doing anything. So I will be happy to hear what this, I'm happy to hear about this solution. And I'm literally like, I don't have to tell me how much it costs, because we need it, because communication is what we do with our patrons and we can't do it consistently and effectively right now. And the solution to move them to email is not a solution, because we all know people who have 8,000 emails because they don't read their email. So moving them to email is not going to help the communication piece. So I'm hoping it's reasonable, but I swear to God, I almost don't even care, because I need a solution to this very major problem.
Right. Well, I'll tell you that just my impression, I do think it's reasonable. I think it is a reasonable fee based on what I know about the market and what I know about how AT&T and Verizon charge for SMSs. Even though, like, you and I can send unlimited SMS messages and texts and videos and from our phones, and we can do it all day long, but we're paying for a cellular plan that, you know, overall for Verizon, you know, that it works out in their favor, you know, but we are paying a monthly fee, each of us, on our own plans. We send, just for your knowledge, just in notices alone, so hold notifications and overdue notifications, all those things, we send about 850,000 texts a year. That does not include, that doesn't count receipts that are texted to patrons and things like that. So we don't have a hard number on the exact number, because they're sent lots of different ways. But MessageBee has a annual fee of $2,500 a year, very reasonable in my opinion. It has a, no, I'm sorry, implementation fee of $2,500 one time, $2,490. That's how much it costs to do the setup initially. Annually, it costs $2,040 for the service. Then you pay per message. So you buy a bucket of messages at 1.4 cents per message. So if you bought 1 million messages to cover maybe a year's worth of text, it would be $14,000. So $14,000 plus $2,000 annual fee plus $2,500 one-time implementation. That would give the Share Consortium a singular face to send messages, which is what we have now. We just send a message that has text in it. Any library branding happens inside the message body, so everybody uses the same template. MessageBee does have the ability to let libraries individually subscribe and create their own profile and their own branding, I guess. We're not looking at that right now. We're just trying to get this problem fixed to get messages going out again. If in the future libraries want to customize it for themselves, it's an option. It's out there to be talked about. I guess the question becomes, you know, to the finance department and with Cassandra, is where does the money come from, and how quickly can we do it, and all those kind of things. So, and how much of a bucket? And the credits never expire. So as long as you're with MessageBee, you could buy 10 million in a bucket, and you would have them until you use them up. So, the price goes down at 2 million. So it goes down to 1.2 cents per message instead of 1.4.
So The fun thing about this is this all happened after we had pretty much finalized the budget. And so really any route we go through, we're going to need to do a budget amendment. And so bringing this to committee, I think that it would probably be easiest to go ahead and use the reserve fund because this was an unplanned expense. It's not very expensive, but rather than trying to figure out how to absorb it into our already published budget, I think it'd probably be easier just to use the reserve fund. But again, because it was not planned, we will need to prepare that budget amendment before we're ready to move forward. So another question I think Rhonda had is, and John kind of alluded, like, what is Polaris doing? Well, Polaris is working on a new multi-pronged platform. You may have heard of Vega. And so, an ancillary product is LX Starter. So we did reach out to them over a month ago, and we still haven't gotten numbers. We followed up, 2 weeks ago, still haven't gotten numbers. We had been told, because we were watching the LX Starter program very closely, it was only released to consortia about 3 months ago. And my suspicion is that it's probably not ready. The other concern with that is, it was the same concern that we had when we were reviewing Aspen versus Vega. You know, they had a lot of changes at Innovative with the merger with Clarivate. I have personally noticed some changes in a not so great direction when it comes to maintenance and support. And so I would not recommend that we go with the LX Starter solution, even once we would have gotten quotes. So that was, you know, the initial question, have we looked at anybody else? We have also looked at Twilio. We got some pricing for them, but we just don't have the capacity to do a lot of the work that MessageBee has already done to make this user-friendly. And so I think MessageBee is probably the quickest and most efficient option. And so maybe just making the motion to go ahead and move forward with MessageBee, with that budget amendment, sending it to the Share Executive Council to be taken up by IHLS Board of Trustees.
Yeah, this is a, you know, this is a problem right away. I'd happily move that we move ahead with this. And for $16,000 or $18,000, that's a pretty reasonable price.
I do have one question though. Okay. So I will basically second that. So we're providing a solution for this year, right? Which is, you know, budget amendment, blah, blah, blah. Are we saying next fiscal year we're also going to take this, but will roughly be $16,000 out of the reserve fund, like, for foreseeable future, or how are we planning on working this into the budget for next year?
So like Troy alluded to, this is we send about 800,000 text messages per year, so this will have to be an annual, included in our annual budget moving forward.
Right, but so my question,
we might go ahead and purchase the 2 million text messages to make sure that we have plenty of cushion in case there's any changes, but then just plan on an annual purchase of the 1 million notifications each year.
And that's, I guess my question is, like, that's coming out of the share budget, correct?
Yeah, that will just be a planned expense coming out of our regular budget.
Is there a report to come out of the regular budget?
I'm sorry, could you repeat the question?
Is there room for it to come out of the regular budget?
Are we talking increase to members in any sort of way here?
Yes, I mean, I think it will be, because it's an annual expense. I don't think that we would need to necessarily increase our membership fees, but it would be an additional expense every year, yes. So we would have to include it as part of our budget.
And we'll get a much clearer idea of how many texts are actually going out. So you'll get an idea of that number. I'm afraid, like, we're right at 1 million. And so my fear is that we'll have to buy 1 million and we'll get into June of next year and it'll be like, we're not going to quite make it to next fiscal year. That's my fear. But it'll be close. So that's just up to you guys.
I guess my concern is not exactly knowing where this money is going to come from in the next fiscal year. And this is me like knowing that we have to have this. So that's just a concern. You know, where do we skim off $16,000? And quite honestly, I mean, if we have, what do we have? 1.5 in a reserve fund, you know.
And we're looking at it this year's in 23-24, we're looking at the moment, it seems a $279,000 surplus from 23-24.
Right. So for me, I'm just like, I don't care if what for the next 5 years we pay for it this way. I don't, you know what I mean? It's like, you know, at which point we can work it into.
Yeah.
And if you divide 16,000 divided by 400 plus libraries, that might be, you know, a minimal.
Yeah. Bump. I think because we just went through the process of increasing our membership rates, I don't think, I'm not so concerned about that part of it when you compare like percentage wise. I think it can probably be easily absorbed. We might have to look at that. You remember how we talked about triggering up to a 5% increase? That might come a little bit sooner than we had expected. But I think with the additional revenues that we're getting from the membership fee increase, I think that we should be okay. Rhonda, do you disagree with my assessment there?
No, I think, you know, we always budget high. I mean, we budget what we think we're going to need. We always come out a little bit better, but that's not guaranteed, of course, because you never know what will happen. But I would assume that we could absorb the 16,000 for a while until it triggers the next time when we do need to do an increase. And I think those are going to come more regularly than what we had this long, you know, lag in between many years in between the last one and this one. So I don't think the membership wanted to do that again. So that's something that's going to have to be evaluated, of course, more regularly now.
How long will it take to get everything implemented? You said that, you know, we'll have to do a budget amendment and that has to go to the IHLS board. Can we start on the project before the board approves it? I mean, how long until our patrons see this as an improvement?
So we would have to go to the Share Executive Council to make the recommendation to send it to the IHLS Board of Trustees. Mm-hmm. So our next regularly scheduled Share Executive Council meeting is next month. So let me get that date for you all.
Emergency meeting. That's all I'm saying.
Well,
yeah.
We
and
could.
With Jill, I mean, I don't know how much people know how it's not working right now. You know, we became aware.
It's patron impacting a lot.
Yeah.
So one of the things I can do is I can give the message be a heads up and just say, we've got to go through this process, you know, but we are recommending it. And I don't see any roadblocks here on anybody that would deny it along the way, just so that we can get as much ready to go once they pull, we can get the trigger pulled, but we couldn't enter into a contract with them officially
until after
it was approved.
So our next, I appreciate the idea of an emergency meeting. Our next meeting is on August 1st. And so we're not gonna be able to get it through before the next, because it has to go through the IHLS Finance Committee first, then to the regular, mm-hmm. Scheduled meeting, which will be
the 12th will be the finance and the 27th would be the board approved finance or board so, approved at the board meeting. So the 27th,
August,
the 27th, 28th would
yeah.
be the
back in September before we could possibly even have a solution.
No. August 27th of August. Right?
Yeah. But you know, to enter into a contract would be the 28th, you know, would
yeah.
be the next day, of course. So, you know, whatever needs to be done would be, for the implementation would have to be started after the 20th.
I'm sorry. I just feel like that is way too long. This is how we communicate with our patrons about fines and overdues. Like that's impactful, really impactful. And the problem is like, you know, we have a lot of patrons who don't even know that this is a problem. you know, like they don't know what they're not getting, you know, except for they just know all of a sudden, like they're not getting books or they didn't get this notice about this overdue or whatever. It's just, to me, it's not an issue that can wait a month and 2 weeks to even start to, you know, implement.
Just trying to think of a workaround. I mean, that's something we can arrange with the vendor.
Yeah,
it would be a risk on their side.
We would be doing an emergency meeting on all three committees then.
Yeah.
I don't know how. An IHLS board has to meet in person to vote on anything. So getting an emergency meeting is very difficult.
But you have a meeting next week. And I mean, it wouldn't have gone. I just say we have a board meeting next week.
Mm-hmm.
And
Tuesday.
And, I understand, but really the board is the authority.
Yeah, but
and,
by our bylaws, the finance committee has to review the budget. So
why can't they meet before the board meeting?
Well, they would. They would meet on the 12th?
As far as next Tuesday, I don't know that we could pull together a meeting. I mean, it would have to be something.
Because it has to go through the Shared Executive Council as well.
Uh-huh. We'd have to have those
and
two
we
meetings
have to, for an
prior
emergency,
to the
even,
board.
Even for a special meeting, we have to have 48 hours.
It'd be a lot. Even us to get the paperwork.
But that 48 hours includes weekend, so it's not like it's just business days. So, I mean, if you're talking even meeting on Tuesday.
But does the finance committee have to meet in person?
No, they don't.
And I'm not going to be at that board, unfortunately. I'm not available for that board meeting either.
That would have to be a discussion, I think, with Leslie for anything, if there's a possibility.
I just, this is one of these things where it's like, I don't mean this to sound disrespectful, but because you all don't work with patrons every day, dealing with this issue, it's maybe hard for you to understand how impactful this is for our staff dealing with it every day. And so if I'm thinking of that times the next possibly 45 days,
God,
I think people are going to lose a lot of faith in what we do.
I think we definitely hear what you're saying. Is we're just trying to figure out a way to fit this within the bylaws that have been agreed to by the share membership and IHLS and do this in the right way and not just, well, ask for forgiveness instead of permission. But
I mean, as director, I have authority in my bylaws to spend up to, I think, $7,000 in an emergency situation or something. Does Leslie have that authority?
An emergency situation, I think it's still, we need like 2/3 of the board vote, even in an emergency situation, if it's past $2,500. So we're very limited on what we can do.
Yeah, that might be a policy worth looking at. I mean, if a small town library director can spend more than that in an emergency, it seems like the Heartland director should be able to do more.
I agree, but unfortunately, it's just the way it is, and we need to follow our bylaws or else, you know, there's repercussions.
Troy, I know you don't know the answer to this, but is there any chance they would do like a trial for us and get it kind of implemented a little sooner, and then they're crossing their fingers we sign all the dots on the paper later?
We promise to pay.
Right.
Like you said, I don't know the answer to that. That would fall a lot on Cassandra and her team to make sure that they're on board with it. Technically speaking, the implementation of the actual process, once everything is in place, isn't a long process. I don't know how it's going to affect like the player's front end. I don't know if there's a change at the patron record that's going to need to happen. I don't think there is. But I don't have that. We haven't talked down to that level of what the implementation looks like yet.
Yeah. And you said it's going to basically ignore the carrier in that field is just going to be using the cell phone number. So in the future, they won't need to be updating their carriers and making sure that that part's correct.
I don't want to say that that's the case yet.
Okay. Well, that'll be wonderful if it is.
So, Okay. Let's just say we can't get this done by Tuesday for this IHLS board meeting. Could we at least try and speed up all these other meetings and then potentially have an emergency IHLS board meeting so that maybe by the first week in August or beginning of the second week in August, you know, I don't know. I feel like we all as library directors know what it's like to have an emergency meeting and what an inconvenience it is sometimes to have to jump through all those hoops to get it all done. But we do it because we have to, because it's an emergency.
Well, Angel, that's where I'm saying it's, I don't think the problem is jumping through the hoops. It's we have to have in-person meetings for IHLS board members. And so that's people driving several hours. And I know, you know, to get people coordinated enough to be able to do that for fitting in. I mean, if I reached out to all of you and said we needed to have an emergency meeting in person next week, could we find a day and time that worked for enough people to make that happen? I don't think we could. And so I will be happy to talk to Leslie to try to expedite this. We can try to get something on a calendar. We're actually here with her today at the Hillsboro Library, and so we can let her know. But I don't necessarily, I'm not necessarily optimistic. With the new requirement of having to meet in person, it does make things incredibly complicated.
Is that true only for the full board, or is that true for the Executive Council and the Heartland Finance Committee as well?
Don't ask questions you don't want the answers to.
It's just for the board. I think that the committees can meet virtually just like we do.
Yeah, because they don't have the authority to approve. The full board is the only one that has the full authority to approve anything. So they usually are just, the committee is an oversight, you know, just oversight committee that is recommending their approval for the board review, you know, if they want to move it to them.
Right. And we're saying we'd have to have not only a share executive council meeting, but an IHLS finance meeting before the board can vote on this. Is that accurate?
Yes.
And so there's no way that the IHLS finance meeting can't happen like at the board meeting, like where like we're just taking this issue to the full board, you know, and like not going through the finance committee, because all the finance committee people are here. And then that way, all we'd have to do is have an emergency chair executive council meeting, which maybe could happen on the 22nd.
We can bring all this to Leslie today and ask her opinion on that.
I mean, this is just how important it is. Right. I mean, at least to me, I don't know.
I think we need to see it as urgent. It's urgent for us parents, for us libraries who are unable to communicate important information that our patrons need. And it's already been a month or more that we've, you know, this, but it didn't all get discovered. I think we all discovered it at different times. And if it's two emergency meetings of groups that can meet virtually, you know, one could be at 6 o'clock on Monday night, and the other one could be at 7 o'clock on Sunday night. They're only going to talk about one issue. It's like, and it should be an easy discussion, and still have something ready for the Heartland board on Tuesday.
Okay. What we can do, like I said, Leslie is here today, so we'll ask her to review this with us and see what we can do. And then I can follow up with the committee after our meeting to let you know what the plan is moving forward. I did hear that we do have a motion to send the recommendation to go with Message V. And just to clarify, that would be for the 2 million SMS notifications, as well as the annual fee and implementation for a budget amendment for the reserve fund. Is that correct, John?
I never said all that, but yes, that's what I'm moving.
That was your intention. Okay.
Yeah, I can say it in person. I can say it if you need it for the recording. I recommend that we move ahead with, what's the name of the company?
Message B,
and pay for the implementation, the annual fee, and $2 million worth of, or 2 million text messages, and that this be expedited as soon as possible.
Okay. And Jill, did you say that you seconded that?
I will second that.
Okay. Then we'll go ahead and do a roll call. Betsy Mahoney?
Yes.
Amanda Doherty?
Yes.
Amanda, just to confirm, I heard yes. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay. John Howard?
Yes.
Jill Pfeiffer?
Yes.
Miranda Sheikh?
Yes.
And Diane Yeoman?
Yes.
Okay, thank
Can
you.
I toss out one other thing here? If for some reason it doesn't get resolved at this IHLS board meeting on Tuesday, I think it's imperative that there is a message that goes out to all the directors, sort of explaining what Troy explained to us about how it used to work, what's happening now and why it's not working. And then this is the solution that we're moving for. And these are the steps that we have to take. And this is why it is taking this long to get this done. Because like I said, right now, nobody's gotten much communication about it. And it's just been difficult.
Yeah. And Jill, we did send out a message in the last newsletter that we had tried known, like what had worked in previous situations that were Band-Aids, but that was not a solution. So we did communicate that mm-hmm. this was not going to be a quick and easy fix. So that was in one of our previous newsletters. But yes, I'll be happy to send out an update as soon as we know what the plan is after we talk to Leslie. I'll be happy to do that.
And I wouldn't do it in it. I would maybe do it in the newsletter, but also send it as an email to all the directors as well. Like, it's just that important.
Sure, absolutely. Yeah. Okay, well then we can go ahead and move on to our next item for business, the authority policy review. Did everybody have a chance to look over that document?
I did, and I'm just going to admit I got a lot of questions. But so if somebody wants to go before me, please do.
Well, to give just a little bit of information on that, this is just part of a planned review of all of our policies and procedures. This month was the authority policy, and so it's actually good timing because we are moving to a different reporting schedule from monthly to quarterly. And so I think you might have noticed that I had a comment about that it was one section that was more of a procedural thing that changes, you know, as our board changes, things needs change, that maybe I would recommend removing that. But that's where this was a little bit more touched on, I think, than some of our other policies would be. So did anybody have any questions or suggestions about the changes?
Okay, so to clarify, the first three sections were what was originally there?
Yes.
Okay. And the whole point of this is just to say that Cher is going to give a report to the IHLS board at every meeting. Is that correct?
Yes, that okay. was the original intent of how the relationship would work when I think Cher was formed.
Okay. So that first sentence of where it's read, right? Well, no, actually, it's not the first sentence. It's the second sentence that starts with Cher will provide reports to the IHLS board. Uh-huh. I personally would phrase that as the IHLS board will be provided a report regarding the status of the Cher consortium, because it's almost like Cher is a noun. Like, what is Cher? Like, who, I mean, I know what Cher is, but it just kind of sounds like, who is Cher in this representation, you know? So to me, it just made more sense to say the IHLS board will be provided a report regarding the status of the Cher consortium, because that's really what this report is about, correct?
Yes.
Then the other question I had was, why was BIB services so separated out from things like management, government, promotion of the automation consortium?
So what we have an operating plan that we submit every year to the Illinois State Library, and there are specific requirements that we have to provide as part of that annual report. And so there are two sections to that, and that's the way they phrase it is the LSAP resource sharing section, and then there's also a section for bibliographic services and bibliographic standards. And so we have to provide both of those reports, and so okay. That's why it's changed.
So that's why then in that next part about it being the share director and the share bib services manager, that's why it's specific to those two people.
Yes.
Okay. Then the other thing was, what is the, okay, so what you just described is the annual plan of service?
Yes.
Okay. Because I think that was my confusion about this annual plan of service. It seemed like something that was like a thing that I don't feel like it needs to be explained here, but I didn't understand it to be what you're saying right there.
Yeah, and so I think that's why I had included the report. I think it says the report is a reflection of the IHLS annual report, or excuse me, annual plan of service. So it matches what we're submitting for our applications to the state library. And so that's why I had included that section.
Okay, then really that helps me a lot. What you just explained there, understand why the things are away. So the only really thing I would have is just to make that first sentence, the IHLS board will be provided a report regarding the status of the share consortium.
Okay. Is there any other questions or suggestions? Other than what Jill has touched on? Okay, and for the second recommendation of removing that last little bit about who is giving the report and how it's being handled and given to the IHLS executive director, I had a note about that being more procedural. Is it okay if I go ahead and get that removed? Does anybody disagree? Okay. I think that this, I would consider this because it's just, you know, again, the status of this report and how it's being provided is a minor change, but it still does need to go to the Share Executive Council. As well as to membership to review those changes through our annual vote, but it'll be best practices once the Share Executive Council has a chance to review it. Does somebody want to make a motion to make those changes?
This is Jill. I'll make that motion.
This is Diane. I'll second it.
Okay, we'll go ahead and do a roll call vote. Betsy Mahoney?
Yes.
Amanda Doherty?
Yes.
John Howard. John.
Well, yeah, yes.
Okay, thank you. Jill Pfeiffer.
Yes.
Miranda Shake.
Yes.
And Diane Yeoman.
Yes.
Okay, thank you. The next step is not an action item. It's just a bit of information. We are in the process of reviewing our cataloging job descriptions. At one point we had them listed for both CMC and SHARE together as cataloger one, cataloger two, and cataloger three. That led to some confusion. And so we have gone through the process of reviewing those. And so we have them now as an assistant cataloger, cataloger one, cataloger. And then we also have levels for a metadata cataloger, a level for a training cataloger, which would have been the cataloger three, like senior cataloger, as well as, which if you've, for anybody who does the cataloging, like Shelley would have been at that level before she became the manager of the bibliographic services department. And then the, a supervising cataloger, which again, Edie would be an example of a supervisory cataloger. And so we did review that, and we are in the process of realigning two of our teammates for on the one on the share side and one on the CMC side. We also separated those out. So CMC is going to be on one side and then share is on the other. They're very similar, but there are some differences on the type of work that they do. And so that's in the process of being reviewed. It has gone through the IHLS Board of Trustees for that. Those job descriptions are still going to be reviewed by the personnel committee, but we will be in the process of making those changes. So did anybody have any questions about that?
And does it materialize the budget for the next year?
Yes, it was. We had not completed that process because when we had submitted this during the budget proposal time, we recognized that there were some issues with the job descriptions. We had to get that resolved. We went ahead and included it as part of the budget process, but we wanted to make sure those issues were resolved before we moved forward. Is that my clarifying? Correctly, Rhonda, we had discussed it and had a little bit
of call. So it's reflected in the budget that we've passed already?
Yes. Yes.
No questions. So,
yeah. And Jennifer, Jennifer was very heavily involved in this process as well. Did you have anything that I've maybe not added that you'd like to include?
Not that I can think of.
Okay, any other questions on that? Okay. All right, do we have any other new business? Okay. Next up, we have the old business. Just to give you an update on the IHLS annual report and the share membership report, we are in the process of completing the IHLS annual report. What we've been asked to do this year is a little bit different of where we really touch on the biggest highlights of projects for the previous year. So, of course, the share membership fee increase will be heavily reported in that report, as well as the Aspen progress that we've made. But at our last meeting, we had also talked about the having a member report separate from the IHLS annual report that we already complete. And so we are in the process of working with the IHLS Marketing and Communications Department. We've submitted a request to have them use our data to prepare an infographic that could be kind of like a one pager that we can mail to members and include on newsletter, email blast, in our website, as well as including it in our annual agreements when we send those out in the spring. So that was just an update from our last meeting that we have made some progress on that. And so the annual report is on track to, it needs to be submitted, I think completed in September for final approval in October through the state library.
It's due to the state library September 30th.
Okay.
So it usually gets presented to our board at the September meeting, I believe, and then they are presented with the audit at the same time.
Okay. Yeah, so hopefully we'll have some information out and available to members sometime in October. Hopefully that infographic will be available.
I'm looking forward to that. And hopefully you'll be open to suggestions if, you know, because I worry one page may not be enough for what people, you know, may find helpful. But I'm super excited to see what you've got.
Yeah, so I'll be happy to share the IHLS. Now, the IHLS annual report, unfortunately, I can't. We are limited to one. We've been instructed we are only allowed to provide one page. So that is kind of a non-negotiable. But for the info, I'm sorry.
I mean, why would somebody care if it was two pages? Like, is it a state thing? We can't be more than one page.
No, that was an internal decision that they want to make sure that we're only touching on the highlights. And so we are just to make sure that, I wanna make sure that our statistics are available, but that we're not, the message is not getting lost. Too many details, you know, can't see the forest for the trees.
Oh no, I agree, but that's interesting. That's all I'll say.
Yeah. So, and that's just a standard for all of the departments within IHLS. We are going to be limited to one page of our, you know, our main projects and our biggest highlights. So, but for the infographic, that's something that's share driven. It's not part, it will be part of what's mailed to members and what's available for a visual representation of our annual report that we send to the State Library. But that's something that we are developing, so we'll be happy to send that out to you as well to review. And if you have suggestions or would like to see additional data added, we could certainly make those adjustments. Any other questions about that? Do we have any public comment? Okay, are there any announcements? Okay, hearing none. Our next meeting is Wednesday, September 18th at 10 a.m. via Zoom. So I will turn it back over to Betsy. And great job, Betsy, is first meeting as chair for the Finance Committee. I'll go ahead and turn it back to you.
All right. Do we do a motion to close our meetings?
I say that you can do the magic words, there being no further business, we adjourn the meeting at whatever time it is.
Right, with no further business, we adjourn the meeting at 11:32.
Thank you, everybody. I appreciate all the questions and comments today. And I will follow up via email by the end of the day today on what the plan is moving forward. Okay.